This is the Finding Business Happy podcast with me, Janelle McGrath, the founder of MarketVeep. This show is all about helping you to live your best life inside and outside of work as a leader in business. Because let's face it, what's important is finding your business happy. Thanks so much today for listening into the Finding Business Happy podcast. Today, I am excited to talk about our guest, Dan Fantasia of Treeline, who is a sales recruiting organization. And I'm excited to hear some of his insights into the trends in the market right now and geek out all things sales.
Hey, good, Janelle. How are you?
Good.
How are things going today? Thanks for having me, by the way.
Yeah, of course. I love hearing your sales intel. So you I get all the good stuff from you. So can you tell us a little bit about, for those who don't know you, Treeline? Because I think it's an awesome organization, and a little bit about kind of how you got started and what's going on in your world.
Yeah, that sounds good. Yeah, so Treeline is an executive search firm, a recruiting firm that specializes specifically and solely in the career advancement of sales professionals. We've been around since 2001, so we've been in business for 23 years. We've helped change the lives of over 3,500 sales professionals, and
that's a lot of people.
That's a lot.
The small arena.
I know. That's just with, helping people find new opportunities. But in actuality, the amount of lives that we've truly helped change has been probably quadruple that. I mean, we're not a selfish organization. So we spend a lot of time coaching, guiding people, helping them with their career and giving them a strategy for a successful, job search. And then on the other end, we help companies find these really good people and make a great match. And because of that, it's afforded us a significant amount of success, and built a wonderful sales community, and we thrive in it. And it's been awesome. I feel very lucky. So mostly because of all the people I work with and I get to work with. So it's just awesome.
I think it's so incredible too, because I mean, when we think about recruiting firms and when we talk to clients, they're like, oh, like I have to hire more salespeople, and like the dread. They're like, where do I start? How do I go about it? And, I think salespeople get such a bad rap. I love them dearly because I think that they're such amazing humans and just kind, and like they're so people-centric, but they do sometimes get a bad rap. And I think it's great to have your organization so focused just on that one segment. What are some of the pains that you've been able to solve? Or like, what are some of the common things that you hear when clients come to you and trying to hire a salesperson?
Yeah. First off, you're right. There can be a really negative because at some point in your life, everyone's had a uncomfortable experience with a salesperson. And so they never
really
want to be that
person. You don't want door knocking at dinner time?
Yeah, right. Yeah. they don't want that experience again, So it is, it's so true. But when you're talking about some of your firms, some of the challenges that companies have or mistakes that they make when they're recruiting is sometimes they're lacking leadership and direction. So as a result, a company, a CEO might say, we need to hire. And they think we just need to hire a talented salesperson. And the salesperson comes in and says, I really want this job. And so they start selling on, how great they are. And the company's selling on how great they are. And they make a match and they make a decision to move forward, but it's a bad match. And it's because there's been no strategy or leadership behind hiring the right person for your organization. And sometimes companies just think, I just need to hire a salesperson, and the salesperson will generate revenue and will grow and will double, and then they fail. And then they hire the next salesperson and they fail again. And it's mostly because they haven't taken the time to slow down a little bit, to work on the business and understand exactly what they need from a sales professional. Who's the audience they're selling to? What is the sales cycle? Or what is the sales size? Are they transactional in nature? Or are they strategic in nature? I mean, there's so many different characteristics that align with different sales personalities. And you want to make sure you align the right characteristics to the right sales personalities so that when they join the organization and they can help you grow the organization.
I think you have such a good point too. They treat it like a magic wand. Like, we need to raise the bottom line, so we just need to hire any salesperson, as opposed to aligning that culture fit we've had people come in, we were talking about the other day, how, you know, they'll talk about, I need to hire this person. I'm so excited. He's such a nice guy. And then you start asking, okay, what kind of sales did they come from before? And they're like, well, he wasn't really in sales. He was in a completely different industry. Okay, what's the your average deal size is $150,000. Has this person ever been around the product line or this particular industry or space? And they're like, no, it's like such a big learning curve. It's not just a plug it in, one and done, and the sale will magically wave the wand and come in. And there is a skill and expertise that really does go into it. What kinds of things, when you talk about like culture fit, what things is it? Personality, or what things do you kind of look for in making that perfect match?
So there's two things. One is the sales environment and the type of the characteristics that are needed to be successful in the sales environment. So that's one thing. The second thing is culture. And culture fit is different than the sales characteristics that align with your selling environment. Culture fit is a bit different. You and I use a business coach, Herb Cogliano, who's awesome. He's taught us so much. And one of the things he obviously taught our firm is how to use our core values to identify individuals that fit into our culture, not the sales process or not the selling environment, but our actual culture. And so it takes a long time to understand and identify the core values that are the most important for your organization. And then it takes time for each and every individual on the team to live daily by those core values. And then once you understand what those core values are, which seems so simple, but it probably took us a year to figure
years.
Out.
Years. Yeah, right. And much self-exploration.
Like, we're just still working on it.
Yeah, it's a work in progress.
But then once you figure that out, then you can start interviewing individuals on what their core values are and do they align with the company's core values. Because if they don't align with the company core values, then they likely will never be a great fit for your corporation. And if they can't live those core values every day because they don't believe in them, then it's just not a good fit. And over time, you will see that they will erode the culture and the environment, and a decision will need to be made. Either you can coach them up or coach them out, but they've either got to adapt, which is unlikely, or you can interview people that share the same core values that are comfortable living them every day.
Did you find in your journey, like when you were going through that experience of finally identifying them, that then you were like, had like an aha moment, but then when you looked back at what you were doing before, you're like, oh, wow, like that like connects the dots as to why, like, and then moving forward, you're like, oh my God, I would never experience that same thing again. But like, it makes sense.
I'll be honest. It was a battle to figure internally, you know, myself, team, everything, to figure out what our core values were and how important they are to us. And at the time, it just seemed like an exercise. But now that I see how critical it is to our success, as painful as it was, I look back now and feel so foolish for not, it seems so simple, but I feel so foolish for not figuring it out earlier. I mean, we've been in business for 23 years, right? We've been in the sales recruiting market for 23 years, and probably 19 of them, I didn't even understand that piece. And we've always had a wonderful culture. We've always been a best place to work, both here locally in Boston by the BBJ, usually ranked number 1, 2, or 3, and nationally by Inc. magazine. But the core values really helped us assess our team. It helped us coach them. If we knew they believed in the core values before they started and they were struggling with the core value, like grit, or one of our core values is grit.
Ours is
they're struggling
too.
With grit. Yeah.
Ours is grit with grace.
Yeah. So if they're struggling, we want time to sit with them and say, listen, you're really struggling on the core value grit. What's going on? How can we help you? You know, if something doesn't go your way, you've got to believe in yourself, right? We've got to get through this with a positive attitude. Like, you have to be able to be resilient. What's happening? What's going on? So you can coach people. And if they still can't figure it out and they become negative, then challenge. But ultimately, we can use them to help our individuals grow. And they don't just have to grow necessarily professionally inside Treeline, but it helps them grow personally. And personally and professionally together, when that all comes together, they become better people, better employees. They enjoy the work. They enjoy the team. And it just becomes more successful.
They get happier, right? when you know yourself more, when you have better alignment. I think the values, to your point, I had this the same feeling. We waited so long and procrastinated, and like we were like, it's, and then we were like, we have them, we're, these are definitely them. And then we lived with them for a year and we're like, something is still not right. And so we removed some, and now we're at a point where we have them and they are ironclad. But it definitely has made for us like the decision making way clear. It's not more like, well, like they're a really nice person and like we think that they can get to where we, it's like, do they have the values and are we aligned on what the values are? And like, it doesn't make them a bad person. It just means that we're not a fit. And when you think about recruiting somebody or hiring somebody, you want to make sure when they get here, they're not like shocked by like this misaligned culture fit, that they are excited to be here and that their values align, because it just makes everything better and easier. What kind of things in the sales, when you talk about like leadership, you referenced about, you know, them not really knowing what they're looking for or like process wise and having infrastructure. Like, what is some words of advice to leadership if they're considering hiring, whether they have salespeople or not?
Yeah, the first thing is, so for all of our clients, the first conversation is really a free consultation. And that is to sometimes maybe challenge them or ask them some tougher questions to understand what's really happening. Why do they need to hire a salesperson? Are they hiring a salesperson because the CEO is the top salesperson and they just can't scale the business because they're creating a logjam? Is that the issue? Or is there another salesperson that's in place and they're struggling to get traction? Then I'd want to understand, well, what does that person's background look like? Where did they come from? And if there are multiple people in an organization and some are having great success and some aren't, then it's all about, you know, who are the top producers? And let's help you find individuals that meet that same kind of criteria so that we can help you, you know, identify and hire, you know, additional top producers. But for every one of those organizations, it's a different strategy. And so when I say there's an absence of leadership, usually it's because someone says we need salespeople and they think it's that easy. Just go find a salesperson. And so then now they're just, maybe they're posting jobs, maybe they're advertising, maybe they're going through their network and friends and family, and there's no leadership as to exactly specifically what they want to look for. Years of experience, average sales size, sales cycle, you know, all those characteristics we talked about before, what quota they will be running after, have they had that quota in the past? And so what we do is we have a little bit more of a playbook and a stronger methodology to ask enough questions to understand what the company's looking for so that we can go to market and introduce them to candidates that meet that requirement. And many times they're really shocked by the level of accuracy we have. And so now all of a sudden they're meeting with 6 or 8, 10 maybe max candidates. And of those candidates, they probably have 2 or 3 that are shortlisted and 1 that they ultimately hire. But that whole the process is a really huge learning process, because now they have leadership and know exactly what they're telling us to go find. They know exactly what they're asking the team to interview around. They have process. They have a job. You know, they have a job scorecard, an interview scorecard. They have process. So they've taken the time and the leadership to build all of this, so they can find and hire the right individual. When I say lack of leadership, many times it's just a company saying, oh, let's hire a salesperson. And then that's what they do. They go, if you said, just Dan, go help me hire a salesperson, you can hire anyone you want. I would have, my team would have 10,000 people in front of you. And right, it's got to be really
specific. Got to kiss a lot of frogs.
Yeah, you got to kiss. Yeah, they'd be kissing a lot of frogs. Hopefully right. What we can do is we can narrow that down to less frogs, but we'll give you some direction so that you can have leadership and hire the right people for your organizations.
Yeah, we talk about a lot of time, quality over quantity. Like in the marketing space, we'll have people come in and say, you know, oh, like I want my number one goal is website traffic. And I want to go, you know, I want to have 10,000 website visits, but they don't care. You're like, but that doesn't actually equate to, if that's 10,000 people who are not going to buy from you, I envision hiring same methodology. The quality of the fit makes all the world a difference. I mean, nobody wants to be on, I don't want to be interviewing all day. I'd rather interview a handful of people who are really great, already aligned. You said a 5-letter word that I know strikes fear in every salesperson I know, quota. Do you find that know how to structure quota in when they're going through this process, or do you guys assist with that part? But I've heard all different kinds of ways. Some make my hair stand up straight. I'm like, what were you thinking? You let the salesperson pick their quota target? There was no conversation of what was going to happen. But what kind of things have you seen?
Yeah, it's, again, you know, absence of leadership, right? The, you know, you really want to own that. Most companies, it depends. It depends on how early stage the company is. If it's founder-led sales organization, many times they don't have quota. And so we would ask. And if they don't have one, sometimes they don't have one. Sometimes they don't understand why it's so important to have one. There is functional accountability here. We do need to make sure that the sales team is held accountable. That's the goal. That's the job. And by the way, any strong salesperson is going to want a quota. If they don't have a quota, they don't understand what the bookends are. They don't know how they make their money. They don't know what their goals are. They don't know what they're running for. Any strong salesperson, likely they will turn down an opportunity if they don't have a quota, because it won't make sense to them. They say, what are we running for? What's the goal? Where's the company headed? So most companies have a goal and a quota, and it's based on, you know, it's basically on, again, your sales cycle, your sales process, your sales model. Basically, what is the average deal size? What's the average sales cycle? So if it's an average deal size is $100,000 and it takes 30 days to close, and it takes, you know, I don't know what how much outreach it takes to get one prospect, to get one demo, to get one deal closed. But by running the math, you can figure out what you think a salesperson will close in their first month, second month, in 12 months. And then that revenue is what that goal, you know, that's basically one way to help figure out what that goal is. If you're early stage, you need patience because you need to ramp someone up, which also means, which by the way, there should be accountability and monthly goals to generate positive revenue. But you will need to be, if it's your first salesperson, you will need to be patient and you will need to be ready to invest in that salesperson, because they will ultimately be building out the model. And that doesn't necessarily mean that they will be profitable in their first year. So there are lots of things that you'll have to figure out based on your sales model, based on compensation for your sales representative, to understand what that quota and goal looks like so that you can give the rep direction and you can push them to, you know, overachieve and find great success.
I love that advice to be patient, because I think there is this sense of urgency once the hire, like how quickly can they close a sale, regardless of life cycle stage, how big their pipeline is, if they've ever ran any campaigns. It's just like, when is the sale going to come in? And I think the being is just so important. And then the second piece, I think, is to add to that is the process, helping define that, being involved with leadership in the process development, because we'll see people say, okay, we hired this person, you know, they're going to build out our whole sales process. So we'll say, how's that going? And they'll say, we haven't seen it. We haven't had any conversations about it, but we're going to talk about it in a month. We're like, but how have you had, this is a brand new person to your organization. How are they going to define your offering, messaging, tone, voice in your sales process and all the enablement collateral, having been at the company more than, you know, a week? So it really does make such a big difference. Culture, the alignment, people taking the time to actually spend with them.
And there should be a clear plan in that first 30, 60, 90 days, an agreed upon, you know, have the salesperson do a 30, 60, 90 day plan, and then everyone can agree on it and then set the goals. So in the first month, this is what's going to happen. In week 1, 2, 3, and 4, this is what we should expect. And the sales representative says, yeah, this is what I think needs to be done for me to be successful in this role. And the management will hold them accountable to those goals. By the way, the management is agreeing, saying, you know what, I don't think this is enough outbound, or I don't think this is, you know, whatever it is. But it's an agreed upon goal in month 1. And then maybe month 2, it looks a little bit different because they're, you know, they've reached out to past customers, or they learned the technology, whatever it is. Month 3 looks different. But every month, they should be, every week, they should really be hitting goals together to make sure that everyone's held accountable and that the sales process is developing and moving forward. But you don't want to just show up on day 90 and say, okay, what have you done? I know.
Terrifying.
It's too late. I mean, you're one quarter into the year. It's so late. You've already lost now that, you know, so.
I think it's a good exercise too, because I see a lot of times that leadership, they're good at holding different departments accountable, but for some reason there's this disconnect on the sales side. I don't know if it's sometimes a lack of understanding of the actions that need to lead up in their particular close, but I think that shared accountability is something that, again, I think it just from the start, as opposed to trying to instill it 30, 60, or 90 days out, it's like trying to put the genie back in the bottle. It's not possible to kind of capture that ground back.
And they've already built habits. This is like a collaborative process at the if you're just getting started. Like I said, we're really talking about early stage or founder-led sales organizations at this point, but there's a different strategy for every stage of an organization. In this instance, for founder-led sales organizations, it has to be somewhat collaborative, learning together as you go, because the new sales rep they don't know enough about, and the owner might not know enough about building actual sales process. So you will need to be collaborative and figuring things out.
What do you think is a reasonable amount of time? So somebody, let's say, who's been in sales 3 to 5 years is aligned in terms of size of sales, and let's say they have a good culture and skill fit to when they first start. What do you think is a reasonable amount of time for that range-wise for a leader to expect to see?
It all depends on what traction is. I mean, if they consider traction to be revenue, like closed deals, I'd want to understand how long it takes to close a deal. Like, is it a 9-month process? Is it $1 million deal? Or is it a one call close and a $10,000 deal? So you'd have to learn more about what that looks like. But every step of the way, there should be progress, right? Like small wins. Janelle, I think you and I have talked about this before, or if not, I think we're on the same page, but it's small wins. What are the small wins? So it takes, 500 emails to get one person to say, yes, I'm interested, to get to a demo. That's a win. What was the content in the email? What was right? Like it's those small wins. Okay, I understand what the content works. All right, so this content works. I'll use this again. And this is the audience I sold to. This, it's a lot of data. It's a lot of learning. Usually hasn't done that yet. And the reason why they haven't built the sales process is because they're the founder. They have a network. They have connections. They're finding sales through a different avenue. They're not finding it through straight cold outreach to close, right?
It's a different muscle.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So if anything, a executive should be looking to see, how does this work? What does this look like? That's going to be critical and super important, and then be collaborative.
The little wins, I think, are many times just so overlooked in the sales process, because they're like, but it's not closed revenue. It's like you went from 500 emails to now we're getting responses from 30% of every email that you send. I mean, that's a massive pipeline. So like, but there's a lot of times just such, if it's not a revenue number, then it doesn't matter. And that's not the case. There's so many other pieces that make it all work together. And a lot of times when we see people come in, they maybe have had like some form of a sales team, say 3 to sometimes 50 or more people, but I say average, let's say 3 to 10, using Excel spreadsheets, but there's no like organized way to say, here's how everything is together, or here's this sales template and we've all been using it and this is the data behind it for the opens, the clicks, the responses, and then taking that lead intelligence. Or they'll say, my salesperson doesn't want to share that information with the other reps or whatnot. And it just, having all of that data makes everybody win, not just the organization, but the reps themselves close deals faster. They're happier because they can hit quota and they stay longer, and you don't have to go through this cycle of constantly training and hiring. And just having the data at your fingertips makes life easier for sure.
And that, if you think of it, right? That takes months. You look back on the first quarter, we're always tracking data because sales is always shifting. And if you don't have kind of a finger on the pulse and you're not managing that all the time, you can lose it quickly. And so to be accurate and effective, you have to be prepared to pivot and change and move based on economic conditions or the market or whatever. But you do need that data, and you constantly go back to it to make sure you are pointed in the right direction.
Do you said trends in the market. I'm sure you must get asked some version of this question. I know I get asked it probably 10 times a day and it gives me hives. But like, how is AI affecting sales? AI is like, it still needs a human, in my opinion, it still needs a human. AI is not going to close, you know, $500,000 deal in a couple clicks, but I'd love your perspective.
There are stats and I don't have them with me, but there is, I forget, it's a relatively high percentage of individuals that regret the decision. So on a lower, like a low sale size that you can purchase on your own without a sales representative, I forget the percentage, and I'll misquote it, but there's a large percentage of buyers that regret their purchase when they have not talked to a sales representative. And the idea is, I think, and sales has changed a lot. You know, it has changed a lot, right? We've been in business for 23 years. It's changed a lot since we first started. And so now it's more around information and data and really helping a client find a good fit. I know personally, and I think you're probably the same, when we're talking to a prospective customer, if they're not a good fit, right? If they're not really, if they don't fit our core customer or ICP, we'll tell them that it's probably not a good fit. It's just not, they're not right for our organization. And we don't want to take on a client if we can't deliver, because it hurts both parties. So I think a lot of companies are trying to, you know, help make a good buying decision. And so if your sales team is doing the work for the right reasons, then I think it's critical to have some type of interaction. I don't think AI can do it alone. I know in our business, AI can never replace, because we spend so much time with every one of our candidates to identify and understand those personality traits that you can't see on a resume. Like it's a lot of heavy lifting. We turn over a lot of rocks.
You can't see its body language in a resume, you know?
Right. It's tone. I mean, there's so many things you can't pick up. So for us, and one of the reasons why we add so much value is we interview a ton of people, and we have to, because in sales, you need to understand these personality traits, or you can't recommend, I can't recommend a one-dimensional resume to a client. I recommend a person for different things they've done and experiences they've had in their life and in their career that make them a good match for your organization. So you just can't do it without a personal connection and without a conversation.
Agreed. I think the openness in those conversations, to your point, we definitely similar in that we turn people away. We've always been of the mindset, like, if we're not a good fit, we'll point you in the right direction. But this last year, we actually took it one step further and and have anybody who, before they actually have a meeting, fill this scorecard out. And it helps us align on things like budget, goals, timelines, internal infrastructure, all things that we found make somebody successful. And that was a game changer, because I think sometimes people will say certain things but mean something else. And when it's really on the paper, then we can actually have a conversation around, well, why did you put this, or how did you come to this particular goal, or, you know, what is the driver of this action, and point them in a better direction if we're not a fit. Because to your point, it just causes everybody heartache, time, energy, investment into the relationship that they're better suited someplace else. And the world is a big place in terms of sales. So there's plenty of, you know, deals to be had. Just help people when you see that you're not the right fit. Don't just close the deal for the sake of closing the deal. One thing I wanted to ask you about was the Stevie Award. I am not super familiar with it, but Herb and I had talked about it a long time ago. And I had said, I saw it, you know, Dan had won this. But like, I'd love to know what prompted you do it, win it, like all the good stuff.
Yeah, I think it's not just the Stevie Awards. I suppose there are some awards that have caught our attention, right? Stevie Awards is part of the American business, you know. Matter of fact, I'm behind me. But
let's see it. Is it right there? Let's see it in all its glory.
It's so heavy.
I'm picturing like the Stanley Cup being wheeled in.
It's so heavy. Yeah, so that one I think was for best executive. The if it was something that some kind of award that we thought was credible and we were attracted to, we figured we would you know, we would try. I think we like, you know, well, I guess we all like awards, but the awards that we're most proud of are the best places to work. Those are for us, you know, like those are awesome. Like they're great because we've won a lot of them. It really, we continue to push and promote just a really positive, you know, work environment. And that's like, that's, I think, the big accomplishments. Those are the ones we're the most proud of.
I agree. That one had been on my bucket list for the longest time. And last year we got on the list and I was like, this is like the best feeling ever. It was better than like the Fast Inc. 5000 that we got that too. But like the best places is like, just like, you know, that you're doing good in the world and like you're improving somebody else's, feels amazing.
Yeah. I think that's a good one. I'm actually, I don't know how many companies apply for those best places to work. I think there's a lot, but I don't know why every company doesn't go for it. Or I guess I do know why, you know, a lot of companies don't.
We always look at the list when we get like the survey at the end and I'm like, which new programs are we going to try to add to, and the list keeps getting shorter. I think there's only, I think we need to figure out a way to do paternity, you know, but other than that, we have, I think last year or 2 years ago, we did the 401k matching. So we're slowly getting to that full list, but that's like the bar in my mind of like, if we can check them all, then we've done something good. Oh my gosh. One more question here. So in terms of like, you talked a lot about company culture, and I know Herb talks about it a lot with us too, and how important it is. And we have, you know, it's why I started this whole organization, because I was sure that I'd never wanted employees ever again, which I look back and think is comical now, because it wasn't having employees that was making me originally unhappy. It was just the wrong fit teammates. And so really going through that journey. But I think about company culture in sales process. So how do you think that influences? So they're, you know, at the organization, but that organization doesn't, you know, have a formal company culture program or anything like that. Like, how do you think culture influences that?
Hugely. You know, sales is tough. Sometimes from the outside, it might not seem it because you only see not the grind. So when you, if you're not in sales and you see salespeople celebrating, you need those celebrations keep trudging forward, right? Because there is a tremendous amount of grind and it wears people down. So the strongest sales environments, they don't necessarily, hopefully they have a strong compensation plan, but they might not have the best compensation plan in the industry. But what they do have to retain their, you know, top talent is a strong positive culture, a culture of belief that believes in them, believes in what they're doing, knows how hard it is, how mentally exhausting sales is when
emotional,
you're looking at,
right?
You know, yeah, it's just, it's rejection. You know, there's a lot of rejection.
All day, over and over.
Yeah. Over and over. It beats people up and things go wrong and deals fall apart and there's all kinds of things that happen. So positive reinforcing environments that help lift people up are important. And it's not just the sales environment, it's the entire corporate environment. If you want a company to grow, you need to support the sales efforts, because more revenue helps grow, you know, the organization. And so positive, you know, enterprise-wide, a positive support system to support all of the employees, including the sales representatives, knowing how difficult the job is critical to sustaining and keeping top sales professionals.
1000% agree. I think culture, a lot of times when we talk to businesses, they'll be like, what do you guys do? What's your company culture like? And they're like, oh, like once a year, we have an annual dinner. I'm like, but what about like the weeks and the months in between the annual dinner? And so I, you know, a lot of them are like, well, we don't have budget for company culture. Like that's just what tech startups do. Like Google's riding around in like bicycles on campus. And it's like, that's not what culture is about. And yeah, I think it does infuse people with that energy, because there is, you know, I can't tell you the amount of salespeople I talk to and they're like, I am exhausted and I get no appreciation and there's no rah-rah. And then you see that person go to another organization and they are thriving and they are just so much happier and they're able to do a better job because they're mentally in a better headspace from having that support system. But yeah, company culture isn't just about lunches and it really isn't.
You don't need a budget. You can do, sales reps can compete with each other. Fun things. The loser has to wash someone's car by hand, whatever, you know, like little things, small things, or it could be like silly things. And by the way, creating the culture shouldn't be the only responsibility of the executive team. That would make me believe that the team, this executive team, is not asking the sales team what's important to them. What do they think would be fun? I mean, it could be simple. The entire team could chip in to buy a person lunch. It could be for bragging rights. It could be for something silly, some kind of silly plastic gold chain. I guess the point is we did Legos.
Our whole team got Legos and we built Legos together.
Yeah, right. So if you're only thinking about tech and big budget for trips and stuff like that, you're missing the point. The big thing would be ask the team, what do they want to do? What would be fun for them, right? And it could be their own little challenges. It could be team challenges, you know, two coworkers against, pair people up. It could be all kinds of things for bragging rights or parking spots or...
Well, that's a very good list. Yeah. I'm going to have to put that in the resources section.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, we do a high five of the month. So everybody nominates the team and it lives in our project management tool and they align to a value for what value they're nominating for and what situation. And then at the end of the month, we draw a random number and that winner, we send them some swag. But then we have a teammate who actually makes up a song on the spot, gets in costume, has a guitar, a ukulele, some instrument usually, and sings a song about how awesome this person is. It is like watching a brand new teammate on that particular call. If I could just record their facial reaction, is amazing. They like lose their mind. They're like, what is happening right now? But again, it builds that like synergy of like, we're just all going to be silly and be whoever, you know, we are, and that's okay.
Yeah, I love that.
But culture works for sure. What do you think finding business happy means to you?
I think finding business happy to me is, personally, it's living a good, everyone living a good work-life balance. And that can be really challenging. For me personally, and even for, I think, a lot of the people on my team, but living good work-life balance, because when you're happy at home, you're happy at work. And when you're happy at work, you're happier at home. So I think that's the key. And that's hard. That can be hard to do.
Yeah, it flows. It ebbs and flows, right? Like there's this cycle of where they need to intersect and where you want space, but it definitely makes a world of difference. Well, I will make sure to drop a bunch of resources in the resources section of the podcast for you, Dan, for your LinkedIn and all about Treeline. But thank you so much for joining and sharing all your insights. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Janelle. That was great.
Thank you so much. And talk to you next time. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Thank you for listening to Finding Business Happy with me, Janelle McGrath, the founder of MarketBeep. If you want a roadmap to finding and keeping your business happy, download our free guide now at marketveep.com/happy.